Thank you. And I'm glad you're here today rather than yesterday, because my voice, I caught something on the way over, and this sounds kind of off, like, you know, I'm entering puberty. But yesterday it sounded more like a cat being strangled while clawing a blackboard. So this is a treat, believe me, for you today. Thank you very much for coming. As Leslie said, it is going to be interactive. So therefore, if you're bound by a tie, loosen the tie. If you've got a sport coat on, take that off. And I'm not going to be tied to the podium. Say your name very loudly so we at least know who each other are. Okay? Good. Gosh, you guys stand well. All right. One, two, three.
Amen.
All right. Good. Now we know each other. Thank you for coming. Again, who am I? Well, I'm just... Leslie mentioned, I'm the president and managing partner of D.W. Simpson North America. I've been with the firm for about 20 years or so. I first started in advertising and was an account executive on major brands therein, like Pizza Hut, R.J. Reynolds Tobacco, and Coors Beer. So all the vices I was involved in. After I got strung out on all those products, I did the most natural thing. I went into improv acting in Chicago. I went through the Second City Training Center. If those of you who know improv and comedy, Second City is like the gold standard of improv. Performed with a number of people who went on to Saturday Night Live, including, if any of you know, Jane Lynch from Glee. Chicago turns out a great number of people in the improv community who go places. So where did I go? Well, the next logical step, actuarial recruiting. And it can be funny. Trust me. And why am I talking to you about presentation skills? Well, actuaries these days, and have for a number of years now, enjoy increasing visibility in the corporate insurance world. And inclusive of that is obviously consulting. And they ascend to various levels, whereas maybe 20-plus years ago, or even 15 years ago, they did not have the opportunities as greatly as they have them today to get into C-suite roles. Additionally, actuaries more and more are finding themselves in high-level roles in non-traditional areas. A couple of areas that come to mind are ERM and predictive modeling and catastrophe modeling. So, you want to improve your communication skills. How do you get started? Well, here's a definition of what I think presentation skills should encompass. And a successful presentation takes place when the presenter engages the audience through his or her commitment to convey valuable concepts and or information by leveraging his or her knowledge, professionalism, personality, and style. So it's not just up on a stage, behind a dice, reading stuff off a PowerPoint presentation. The more that you can infuse yourself, the more that you can infuse your knowledge, your personality, and your own particular style, the more successful your presentations will be. Well, how do I get started? Number one, self-assessment. I've found through the years in the business world that the most successful people are people who are always and continually very self-aware of who they are, how they come across, and how they can work on those things. So who are you? Yourself, obviously. You know yourself better than anybody. What are your personality traits? You should know those, but you can also go outside of yourself to close friends, loved ones, and say, you know, how do I come across? And really take ownership of your strengths and weaknesses. One of the things that can be very self-defeating is kind of putting your weaknesses to the side and only focusing on your strengths. But in order to build your menu of strengths, you need to really focus on your weaknesses as well. So Just for fun, here are a few of the presentation styles that I'm sure you've seen over the years. I certainly have at various conferences. There's Captain Monotone. I think that goes without, you know, don't need too much of an act for that. Rambling Wrecker, Senior Speed Read. He's the person that just wants to get this thing done because he wants to get off the stage, get the information out to the people, make sure that they have it, and zip out this hall as quickly as possible. The Ummer, you know him. Podium Pete, he's great. Podium Pete is so scared to death to give this presentation that he's holding on to dear life for the podium because this is his shield. You can't get to him. He doesn't want to be here, but this is his shield. Mr. OK says OK after every other sentence. Backside Bernice is giving you the presentation like this, pointing stuff out on the screen. All you see is her backside, and all she sees is straight ahead. She doesn't see you because you scare her to death. You're not out here, okay? So that's comforting to backside Bernice. The Mumbler, now, I'm sure you've heard the Mumbler before. And then Face Down Freddy, well, it's the stepbrother of backside Bernice. He's just down like this, looking at everything. You don't exist, so he's not that scared. Okay, that's some fun. Going on with self-assessment, who should you be? You know, obviously, be yourself. Don't try to be somebody else, somebody that you aren't. It'll turn out being very awkward for you if you are. But look at professional traits that others convey and traits that you admire in people who give speeches, who carry themselves in your office. And not that you want to copy them, but you can incorporate those types of impressive skills and traits into your own makeup and your own countenance. And again, continually work on your strengths and weaknesses. Explore those. Don't be afraid to do so. So, the self-assessment equation nets out to who I am plus who I should be equals always yourself, the unique you that is you, and the dynamic actuary, which you will work on to create, and that is with traits that form the communicative me, an actuary poised to participate impressively on multiple fronts of the business world, including within the presentation arena. It's not just presentations, but it's about how you come across in the office, how you relate to senior management, how you relate to people that report to you, how you relate to outside clients. All those things form the communicative me or you. So how do I become this dynamic actuary? Follow your fear. That's the biggest thing that gets in the way of not just actuaries, but business people overall who are charged with imparting information to others is the fear factor. Oh my gosh, I got to give a presentation. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be in the boardroom. Oh my gosh, we've got a conference call with a client. Let your fear go. I had an improv instructor while I was doing my improv training in Chicago. His name was Del Close. He used to do a lot of drugs with John Belushi in the 70s, and it showed. But he was a very brilliant man. And I remember a couple of kids were up on stage, entry-level improvisers, and they were just kind of muttering about. And you could tell they were both scared to be on stage, which is odd because if you want to be an improv actor, you can't be scared on stage. So Del Close from the back of the room with a lit cigarette belted out, "What are you doing, you two? You're here to perform. You're improvisers. You can't be scared. Follow your fear." And it makes a lot of sense. Follow your fear. Because if you run from your fear, what do you accomplish? Absolutely nothing. You know, you at best give a real lame presentation, feel bad about yourself, and you will have not given the due respect to the audience of providing a good presentation. But if you follow your fear, you work on the things you need to work on to give a good presentation, then you'll take steps and you'll make yourself to that point where you can address these things and give solid presentations. So, follow your fear means be prepared, excited, and very willing to take steps outside of your comfort zone to develop yourself into this dynamic actuary. And now the key, preparation plus performance equals presentation. Know the subject matter thoroughly, that goes without saying. If you don't, boy, you're going to fail. Know the audience. Know to whom you're speaking. What is the various makeup of the audience? The number of people attending and the size of the room, especially if they're technological glicks that you've got to improvise around. How to dress. If you're going to a presentation and everybody's going to be in formal business attire, you better not be business casual. You stick out like a sore thumb. Know the technology to be used. Make sure you have a backup plan in case it does fail. And if you're presenting at a conference with fellow panelists, make sure that you know their material as well. Not that you're charged to be a subject matter in what they're presenting, but have a good understanding of what they're presenting so you can enrich your presentation and or perhaps jump in on theirs to help them out as well. Some things to work on in performance, the verbal, while speaking, know how you come across, tone-wise, attitude. I've been to presentations where the person giving the presentation almost had a condescending sort of attitude, and it's really off-putting. So know how you speak, cadence, things beyond your innate physical. Listening. Listening is huge. Everybody thinks that people with great communication skills, I speak great. Wow, look at her. She presents herself well. She's such a strong individual. She can speak to everybody and so forth and so on. A large part of that is training from the very early days of listening. The greater that you can intake from your audience, the greater that you can intake from people on a day-to-day basis in the business world, and really open yourself up and listen to them, the greater your output will be and the more impressive your output will be. So listening is just as important as delivering. And then, adapt yourself to the various presentation scenarios. Is it an external client meeting? Internally, your bosses, your peers, lower-level people. The most impressive senior people that I've seen over the years are people who are as equally respectful and generous with their time and their communications to not only senior people that are peers, but to the lower-level people. I had a boss in advertising who just sucked up to all the senior partners in our ad agency, but when it came to dealing with us lowly account executives, the guy was unruly. He was an ass. And I don't know what he's doing today, but it just wasn't a pleasant experience. And believe you me, people in the executive ranks, they see that, and they're not fooled by that. Some of the nonverbal to work on, energy. I think this is the most important thing, the element to have in giving a presentation. If you have energy and you know your subject matter, you stand a good chance of giving a good presentation. Hand in that is enthusiasm. Really be excited about the information that you're delivering. And even though it might be dry information, be enthusiastic about it. Because if you're not, then you stand a great chance of losing a good proportion of people. Physical presence, if you're kind of mopey or whatever, your usual countenance isn't that strong, look at yourself. Get feedback from others. Really strike a pose, God bless you, on stage to show people that you mean business. You are a fount of knowledge. Your enthusiasm and energy and the mere presence of your stature will help carry the day. Dress, as I mentioned, dress appropriately. Commitment. Commit to the presentation before, during, and after. Commit to it by putting it together with the best of your knowledge and the best approach in terms of conveying the information. Commit during it, just as I explained, with energy, enthusiasm, and a physical presence, and afterwards being open to questions and whatnot. Even beyond the presentation day, be open to talking to people down the road, give them your card. Hey, if there's something that you want to talk about, give me a call. And then knowledge, obviously. Know your stuff.
Okay, this is where we do our presentation breakout exercises. Excuse me. But we're going to go through the rest of the presentation. We learned in yesterday's event that it'd be best to do this. And then what I'm going to do for the presentation exercises is we're going to break into groups of about six or so, and I'm going to give you topics. Each group will have a topic to do a real quick presentation on. They're not technical, number one, because I'm not technical, and they're fun, and it's something that, it'll give you an opportunity to get up here as a group, give a presentation on an inane topic, have some fun, be bold, and try to incorporate some of the things that we've talked about. Some recommendations for improving your presentation skills. Seek constructive criticism on an ongoing basis throughout your career.
Don't be satisfied with one success and think, oh, I got the hang of this. Be open to hearing what others have to say. If this is a daunting thing for you to give a presentation or be in conference rooms and boards of directors, taking acting or an improv class, you'd be surprised at how much can come out of you that you didn't know existed. Practice presentations with coworkers. I think this is great. You get four or five of you in a conference room during a lunch break each week. Somebody gets a subject to give a presentation on, and then everybody else gets constructive criticism, and then rotate the next week. Somebody else does the same thing. If doing that sort of thing really is too heavy for you, baby step it with maybe joining a book club, where you're in a group of people sharing subject matter and sharing it together in a very comfortable environment. It can draw you out and help you. Update your wardrobe. Again, I can't stress that enough. It's not just what you deliver, how you deliver, but how you look as well. Observe speeches of people that impress you or don't impress you. Always be open to taking a look at what politicians are saying, what clergy are saying, what business leaders are saying, sports people are saying. Anybody who's in the public eye, observe how they speak and see what you like. A humbling thing is an on-camera class. You work with an on-camera coach, and you deliver some copy, and then you take a look at it on film, and it's very humbling, but it's very helpful, too. And take part in group activities that require meeting new people and who require leadership help. You know, constantly putting yourself out there to broaden your horizons, not only from a knowledge standpoint, but from a standpoint of communicating with people from different areas and in different fields. And one of my faves is exercise. If you exercise, the endorphins in your brain, they heighten, and it just makes you that more keyed in as an individual to be impressive. That's my own bias. How are we doing on time? Okay. So, bottom line is follow your fear. If this is something that is daunting to you, take charge of it. You own it. You own yourself. You own your career. Nobody else does. So follow your fear. And again, be prepared and excited. You know, don't go in this with like, oh my God, I got to do this. Be excited to follow your fear, to take steps outside of your comfort zone and develop yourself into the dynamic actuary. And finally, if you can't sell yourself, you're going to have a much harder time selling your ideas. You know who said that? Yeah, that was me. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to break you out into groups of, I think, four. Let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Yeah, let's count off. Count out by fours all around the tables. We do that starting with Chow. You're one.
Two.
You're two.
Three.
James.
Four.
Five. No, one.
One.
Start here.
Two. Three. Four. One. Two. Three. Four. One. Two. Three. Four. One.
Wow, it's perfectly even. That's great. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have fun. All right. I want you all to get in your groups. One's in one group. We got a lot of room in this room here. One's together. The two's together. Blah, blah, blah. Blah. Get your groups away from the other groups. Make sure that you have ownership of your space and your ideas.
Yes, go.
And I'm going to give you your subject matter in just a second, as will Leslie. So you'll have about 10 to 12 minutes to just, on the spot, come up with a presentation. Each of you will include his or her own perspective on the topic that's being presented. You'll speak for 30 seconds to 45 seconds at most. If you go over 45 seconds, I'll start banging on a table. And the reason why I'm saying that is because we want everybody to have an opportunity to do this, not because I'm some sort of a weird tyrant. And have fun with it. Be bold. Be creative. Push the envelope. Get outside your comfort zone. So here come the topics. Better. I've got my whole arsenal of tissue down there. Oh, this is great.
Thank you.
One minute. All right, folks, we're dying to see your presentations. Let's go back to our seats. Which group would like to go first? I like that. Somebody who's bold, who wants to tackle this right away. And your group?
My colleague said she doesn't do it first time.
Hey, you're all together. You're one team. What group are you? What number?
Four.
Four going one. I like that. Okay, 3-1, have a seat. 4, come on up here. You don't need a microphone because it's a small room. You can project. Part of being a presenter is able to present in a room, project your voice without amplification.
Okay, everyone ready? Well, good morning. We've been commissioned by the Cheese Marketing Board to come up with 7 new ways of uses for cheese other than eating. My suggestion is that it's very useful for actuarial conferences, particularly if you use a soft cheese, roll it into a ball, stick it in the ear, when you don't like, well, preferably stick it in 2 ears, when you don't like what's being said. But a tip for everyone, make sure you don't eat the cheese after you've used it in that way. We do have another suggestion about how to use it that might make that work.
My use for cheese is on the family theme, so smelly cheeses. I've got young children who very rarely do what I say, so it's more about dispersing them when they need to go to their bedrooms. So bring out the smelly cheeses, so a nice stinking bishop. If it's really naughty, bring it out, sure to get them to run down their bedroom and be banished.
Well, my use of cheese is also in the family environment, but I use it more to get what I want and to bribe my husband. As long as there's cheese in the fridge, he's going to be happy. He'll even eat a salad if I put cheese in the salad. So it keeps him healthy, keeps him happy, and all's well.
Well, I have a use for cheese in the workplace. My favourite sort of cheese is the really smelly sort of French cheese. Runny and mouldy and highly pungent. But one of the problems I sometimes have at work is that I find there are some people who have, you know, body odour type problems or wear too much aftershave, so I'm going to take my smelly cheese to work and that lovely cheesy smell will drown out all the unpleasant odours that are around me.
You've heard of people sort of running with their mates or running with the bulls? Running with your dog, or my new use was to run with your cheese. You have different sizes, so there will be categories according to the size of cheese you're running with. Of course, it's a round one, so you've got to roll it along, and different distances as well. Of course, the marathon will be the ultimate.
I think I'm probably quite unique here. I don't like cheese, so I had to actually think of uses for cheese that I'd actually use it for. So I thought it was a spare wheel. You're just driving around, you get a flat tire. Rather than having to carry a spare tire at the back in the back of the car, you can just walk into a supermarket and buy a nice block of cheese, nice round block of cheese, stick it on the car and away you go again. And it's a nice convenient way of doing it. There's supermarkets everywhere, so no problem. No need to carry a spare tire at all. And you can just get back on your way as quickly as possible.
Introducing a new range of furniture design for interior designers amongst you. Cheesy furniture. I'm starting with the new chair, which is a nice circular breed. It molds to your bum. I've got a few more designs kind of down the track. There's the big table made out of Parmesan cheese, nice and hard and flat. I've got some blue cheese designs coming through and some black ash coming through after that. And then down the track we've got some fruit-based designs, so cheese furniture with grapes and apricots and a whole variety.
Beautiful. Nice. Good job, guys. We'll talk
afterwards. Very nice job.
Excuse me. Nothing like going into the supermarket to get a nice round block of cheese. I like that. You ready?
Yep.
And your group is
about
No. What number are you?
Two.
All right, group two.
Wasn't that a cheesy presentation? Well, now we're going to clown around. Well, our topic this morning is, our goal is to take you with us in the next 3 to 5 minutes to think about the topic of clowns. Do they make you laugh or cry? It's something so profound you probably never thought about it, and we didn't. But we have assembled here a panel of experts, a former clown, some parents, and even some academia. So give us your full attention for the next 3 to 5 minutes. You've all seen a clown. Do they make you laugh or cry?
Well, clown is a necessity in children's birthday party. When you have a room full of kids screaming and fighting with each other, when clown arrives, great, because he got their attention. I really don't care whether he makes them laugh or cry, because I know that's when my coffee breaks.
Hi, my name's Stuart, and I'm a former clown. Most important thing to remember there is the former.
That's right.
This arose for my daughter's birthday party. We thought we'd get a clown in. I got the yellow pages out. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. I rang around, no clowns available. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. But I thought, I can do this. As a clown, what do? You do little tricks. You juggle, perhaps. Can I juggle? No. But that's okay. I'm a clown. I can drop it. I did my best, and I looked at the kids, and they all laughed. And in the end, it made me cry. I felt so good.
Good or bad, he still needs to give fun to everyone, and everyone is expecting fun from him, but not expecting giving fun to the clown. So maybe next time when you see a clown, give him some fun and at least support what he's performing.
There's this guy Bob. He says you've got to dress to your character. Now, how did I know you're going to be a clown? When I see a clown, I feel sorry. I feel awkward for him. Have you ever had that feeling in the audience? You've got this guy clowning around on stage. He's going to have to try and make you laugh, try and make you cry, but what happens if he doesn't make you feel either of those? I just feel so emotional for the clown because of that. I feel a bit awkward for him, the poor old clown.
And I'd like to thank our fascinating panel for their wide variety of views on clowns and the emotional responses that they can generate. And actually what we concluded was the important thing was that they make you feel something, whether you feel happy or sad, and it's that emotional response that really is the core of what the clown brings to us. So thank you everyone for their perspectives, and I really enjoyed hearing that, and I hope you did too.
Great. Very nice.
Very nice, both very nice, both groups so far. Woo! All right, who wants to go next? Next. All right, numero tres.
Choice. I'm in a hurry. So he starts fitting the shoes. I'm in a hurry, Bob. But he gives me more to try on, and he makes a big fuss over trying every shoe on.
I think you need new shoes, Bob.
I need to get new runners again. I keep running out of them. It's just unbelievable. But I tell you what, my naughty secret is the fact that if I go to a shop, I mean, you guys were talking about smelly cheese earlier, I tell you. I would go into a shop with smelly cheese just to divert attention. But I tell you, when I go into the shop, I sort of make sure that it's fairly quiet and I go across to the side. But I only go to one particular shop because there's someone there who, no matter how much I've been running, how bad this feet smell, he deserves a medal. He's there, he checks it all out, gives me the right shoes. I tell you what, this guy needs a medal.
Hi, darling. Can you make a quick on in the middle of this complicated spreadsheet? Yes, yes, I know. I need to go and get those new shoes. Look, I'll do it during my lunch break. The shop's just around the corner. I can get down there, I can get in, get my shoes, get out, and get on with the day. I'm an average actor, just need some nice black shoes, you know. Okay, well, I go in there, you know what guys are like, just find the thing, buy it, get out. But no, he wants me to try them on and do up the laces. It was all a bit too creepy.
Well, I've been running the shoe store for the last 15 years. And you know how hard it is to get good people? It's hard. But about 5 years ago, we managed to get this wonderful salesperson. Absolutely wonderful. I don't have to watch him. I don't have to encourage him. He comes in, he deals with everyone beautifully, whether they're young and beautiful or old and beautiful, they're all beautiful in his eyes. And he goes to great pains to look after them.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know when some customer comes in into our shop to buy a shoe, we have the greatest pleasure, not only to sell them good shoes, but we also have pay detailed attention to how their feet look like, so that we can find the best suiting shoes for them. And it's our greatest delight that when a customer comes in, we will examine every treat the feet as if it is a piece of art. Sending all the contour, all the bumps and the shapes of the feet and the legs. And then we would recommend all types of shoes. But at the same time, we take our time and let them have the time to think about it. And after that, I will recommend to my manager to deal with it.
My name is Bob, and I'm a shoe salesman. I know you actuaries think that you have the best job in the world, but you are wrong. As a shoe salesman, I get to meet people of all walks of life, young and old, beautiful, not so beautiful, men and women, mothers, children, and so forth. And they all come in here with a problem to solve. I get to know a little bit about them, their situation, what they're trying to solve, what the need is that they're trying to fill with their shoe purchase today. And it's just terrific. Wonderful people. I really enjoy working with them. But the best thing about it is, the best thing about my job is that every once in a while, Claire comes in and I get to caress her foot.
Great, guys. All right. And then there was one.
Team here today, we decided bigger is better, but what does that mean to everybody? Because everybody thinks big, everybody thinks differently, and so it's important to hear all of those views and make sure that we stay at a big picture level so that we get a better outcome.
Walking, noise, traffic, people, fumes, skyscraper, travel, high, fresh air, view, peace, wonderful.
Following on from the previous speaker who was talking about big skyscrapers and their beautiful imagery there, I'm building my house at the moment, and big is definitely better when it comes to houses. I'm thinking a big rumpus room so that you can relax, turn and watch your TV. I'm thinking big outdoor living area so that you can have a barbecue with your friends. And I'm thinking a big toilet so that you can relax in a spa at the end of a hard day you're doing an actuarial job. And I'm thinking a big bedroom so you don't have to hear your kids screaming.
So we're going to a completely different topic compared to houses. And I thought of bigger is better. I thought of hurdles contests. My son does hurdles. And when they start doing under-9, they're all very small. And every year the hurdles got bigger. And the children, some children got bigger and some children didn't really get bigger. And the children that got bigger with the hurdles. And now the bigger children are winning the races. So bigger really eliminates competition. As long as you don't get so big that you become one of John Moroney's cities and you get completely overregulated.
Being big doesn't always mean that it's free from competition. Makes you feel better as well. For example, a big aeroplane makes you feel very comfortable because it's sturdy, it's stable, you feel a lot safer. There are more people on board, so you know that you're always around people that make you feel comfortable. They can always help you when you run into trouble. And overall, bigger things are more sturdy, bigger things are more stable, and you feel much more comfortable. Being part of a bigger thing, which is an aeroplane.
Very good. Well, for me,
better, but what is there to me? I mean, well, size does matter, but do I want a skyscraper? Do I want a big house, like you, a big airplane? But to me, I want a really big dream, just like David. So to me, I believe if you dream big, think big, you achieve big results. And for actually like us, we got to be ambitious. We got to have a big dream of our own, create our own career. So yeah, this is what I think that's big for everyone.
All my colleagues have talked about how big is better in different ways. And I'm trying to convince you that the quintessential ingredient in all of these ideas is a big screen TV. You need a big screen TV for all of these to work. For a big dream or a big idea, it looks much better on a big screen. If you're actually working in a big building, your spreadsheets look much better on a big screen. If you've got a big house, and I bet you're getting a big screen TV in your own business, and I'm sure your kids will love it. So, big aeroplane, how many times have we gone in a flight and the screen's pretty small and you know, you've got to lean forward the whole flight and figure out what's going on? Much better with a big screen. You save your neck, you save your back, you don't get DVT. Much better with a big screen. So bigger is better, guys.
Very nice. All right, just a couple quick notes and I'll let you go because it's 8:30. Really nicely done. It was apparent from everybody that you really put yourselves out there and were bold and took this to heart and committed to doing the exercise. And that's really all a presentation is really committing to invest energy, enthusiasm, and creativity in putting something together that's going to be engaging for an audience. As long as you are the knowledge subject matter expert, you have at your disposal any number of things that you can do to make the presentation engaging, interesting, and meaningful to an audience. Just real quickly, the first group that went with cheese, real interesting stuff in terms of being creative on how to use cheese. I mean, think of those sorts of things. Be creative on how you can project dry, boring numbers in your presentation. I mean, those are the sorts of things that you need to do is be more creative. Remember when presenting, a number of you in all groups here, kind of like this, relax. You know, get out there and strike a bolder pose. And many of you did that. Group number two, the second group that went, nice. There was somebody that introduced the subject matter with a nice opening, and then at the very end, and there was great stuff in between, and then at the very end, there was a nice closing summation. Every story, no matter what it is, has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And your presentation should have those too. That is a story arc that is universal among anything being communicated or should be communicated effectively as a beginning, a middle, and an end. And group two did that very nicely. Love seeing the former clown, scary clown, nice commitment to being a scary clown. That was very scary. The third group, I liked you had one theme throughout the whole group, which was the naughty secret. It was a great way to thread it through the whole presentation. Again, another example of a beginning, a middle, and an end with the creepy part of Bob grabbing Claire's foot. I loved it. Nice job. And then finally, the last group, number one, on Bigger is Better. Again, another great introduction. The second person, John, was that who went next? Imagery. All he did was rattle off words that, you know, connoted bigness. And it was real interesting to see that. And then, you know, capping it off with, hey, guys, let's be real. A big screen TV is where it's at. We all know that. So everybody, you did a great job. I'll be around at the conference. If you have any more questions, this will be on our website. I heard the bell ringing, so I think we have to go to our next session. But I'll be here, too, if you want to ask me some questions. But thank you very much.